Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Hour two on a Labor Day Monday live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. Colin right, Colin wrong in a couple of minutes. Warren Moon, the Hall of Famer, is going to be joining us. It is a Labor Day Monday, of which we had a glorious weekend of college football.
Glorious.
And, you know, here we come back as a nation. I think you forget last year. At this time last year, we had no NFL preseason. We're all yelling and screaming at each other regarding, like, should you play college players? There were health concerns. I mean, it was, if you go back a year ago, we didn't know. I mean, we knew we were getting football, but the Pac-12's like, no. And the Big 12 went out, then came back in. It was a mess. A year ago, it was a mess, and I think we were all taken back by the quality of the NFL season. I mean, you and I noted multiple times. How did they pull it off? Now, part of it was the NFL got to watch baseball stumble and basketball, so they got to watch people make mistakes. You know, COVID hit the NBA in the middle of a season in March. So, you know, they're backtracking. They pulled off a miraculous bubble. I still can't get over how good that was. And so, you know, now we come into it. Now we have the NFL has got some COVID protocols.
Yeah, we're still screaming and yelling at each other, but we're doing it in person.
It feels like somebody said to me when the pandemic first hit, we were all kind of on the same side. Let's hide and get through this. Now everybody's splintered off. But I do think if you look at the college football numbers this week, everybody is happy that we at least have games. You can go to them. You can be out in the sun. And so cross your fingers. Hope we get through this thing without any more COVID missteps in sports. Where Colin was right, where Colin was wrong, brought to you by Jersey Mike's Sub. They got a new grilled portobello mushroom and Swiss. It's delicious. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above. And here we go.
Where Colin was right.
We predicted UCLA would upset LSU. Pac-12 teams don't beat SEC teams much. We predicted it, and we said UCLA had so many seniors on that defense. They're a bunch of grown men, and they pushed LSU around. You don't see Pac-12 teams push ranked SEC teams all over the field. But UCLA, by the way, Zach Charbonneau, I'm not sure how long he's going to be up in Westwood. That kid looks like an NFL back to me. But UCLA looked well coached. They were old. They were physical. And I watched at least highlights of every Pac-12 team. They look significantly better and better coached than any Pac-12 team I saw. USC's in big trouble. It's not going to be friendly when they meet. This is a really good UCLA team.
Where Colin was wrong.
You know, the Patriots quarterback situation was a complete miss by me. I didn't know if Mac Jones would play. He started 1 year in college. Belichick's got to win games. Cam Newton, I thought, was starting in the preseason with the ones. And all you hear is Cam, and now it's Mac Jones' team. Mac outplayed him. Got to be fair. I was wrong. He was the one college quarterback I wasn't in love with, but he completed 69% of his throws. He had a 97 passer rating. And when Cam made that misstep with the COVID, I think that kind of sealed it. But he's been a surprise to me. Now, again, the Patriots played starters in the preseason. Not a lot of teams did. So I don't know what to make of it. But he's accurate. He gets his feet under him. He gets them in and out of plays quickly. And from what you hear from coaches and players, he's got some leadership it. So here you go.
Where Colin was right.
NFL executives had a poll last week. And in that poll, major skepticism regarding Tua in Miami, their quarterback. Only 11th. Executives in the NFL put Miami 11th in the AFC. Said one executive, with Tua, I'll believe it when I see it. Now, you know I've been skeptical of this because I don't see the special. I don't see it in the arm. I don't see it in the athleticism. I don't see it in the size. And it should be noted, this team went out and made contact with Deshaun Watson's peeps. So as much as the Miami fans want to yell and scream at us, your own team has some issues or concerns with the ceiling of Tua.
Where Colin was wrong.
I had Clemson potentially playing for the national championship, and they got pushed around by Georgia. They couldn't run the ball. That young quarterback, you know, he was locked in on certain receivers. I didn't see their wide receivers get any separation. I think their offensive line looked completely outmanned. And the wide receiver struggled. Their O-line struggled. Their quarterback struggled. They had 2 yards rushing all night if you include the sacks. And it, simply put, Georgia's defense had way better players than Clemson's offense. We know it's not the coaching with Clemson. We know they do that really, really well. So I don't think Clemson's a powerhouse unless they make major upgrades on the offensive line.
Where Colin was right.
I've always been a Steve Sarkisian fan. I thought this was a tough opener. Louisiana brought back like 15 starters, but they looked aggressive. They were clever. They were very multiple, and Sark did what good coaches do. He gave the ball to his stars, and they may maybe have the best running back in the country. I thought the offense, they really played with a style, with a point of view. I thought just from all their multiple looks, they're young. This is not going to be his best team. They're going to stumble at some point, but I thought they looked really well coached. And I think football is one of those rare sports, I really do, where you can see well coached and poorly coached teams very quickly. And I thought Texas looked well coached.
Where Colin was wrong.
Just when I'm about to anoint the Dodgers as a World Series champ, they lost 2-3 to the Giants. Will this team ever stay healthy? Cody Bellinger is hurt or awful. Mookie Betts hurt again. Now A.J. Pollock's out. Max Scherzer had a hamstring issue and had to leave early. If you lined up the rosters for the Giants and the Dodgers, you'd swear to God it would be all Dodgers. But situationally, they get just good enough pitching. 2-3 over the weekend went to the Giants.
Where Colin was right.
I've always said with Cam Newton, I've never seen a disconnect bigger between the media and the NFL. The media loves him, Cam Newton, and treats him like he's Mahomes. And the NFL execs don't. He didn't have a market when he was a free agent. Now he didn't have a market as a backup. Will Greer was off the market in 30 minutes to Dallas, and Cam Newton has not even been a rumor that somebody is interested. Now, many people say, well, Cam doesn't want to be a backup, and that's quite possible. But at this point, I think most people would be honest and say he is a backup. So, I mean, Nick Foles won a Super Bowl and outdueled Tom Brady, but he's viewed as a backup, and that's okay. That's what Nick Foles is. And that, I think, is what Cam is. But I've always said there's just a disconnect. Most of the time, the media treats stars like stars, and good guys like, you know, good quarterbacks and backups like backups. We got to be honest about Cam now. There's no market for him. There wasn't a year ago, and there's not now.
Where Colin was wrong.
Well, the two quarterbacks I had the most skepticism coming out of college were the two highest graded, Mac Jones and Zach Wilson, in preseason. Now, I don't know what to make of preseason, but the three guys I like, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, and Trey Lance, Tony Romo is now comparing Zach Wilson to Patrick Mahomes. So Tony Romo knows football. This is the inverse of what I predicted success. Now, it's preseason, but whatevs, I got to be honest.
Where Colin was right.
Finally, the Ben Simmons situation gets worse every 2 weeks. My rule has always been in the NBA, where stars run the league, not coaches, GMs, or owners, is that if a star is unhappy, get on the phone and move him. You're just going to give him more and more leverage because stars know they have power, and they're not going to be patient, and they're going to come out at some point and make demands. James Harden basically said, I'll play for three teams. I think the Sixers are getting a little stubborn and a little precious here. Ben Simmons' value is just not great. Off of that Atlanta series, he appears indifferent to coaching. It's just gotten worse. Every 2 weeks, there's a new story. And you can tell, by the way, Simmons is feeling more empowered every 2 weeks. He's gone from may not show up to camp. Now he is officially demanding a trade with Ben Simmons. I think they got to move him. And I contend Golden State is the place to move him. Colin right, Colin wrong. on a Monday. So Thursday, the NFL season begins. We can't wait for it. 17 years, 9 Pro Bowls, and a Hall of Famer, not only in Canada, but here, of course. It is Warren Moon joining us live. You know, we don't talk a lot about offensive linemen, Warren, and then Zach Martin gets hurt for the Cowboys, and I went and looked it up this morning. They literally average a yard per rush less when Zach Martin doesn't play. I think that would startle most people. We all know Zach's good. But I look at that Tampa opener, and I think, I saw what happened to Kansas City when they weren't fully equipped on the offensive line against Tampa. And I look at that Zach Martin situation, I'm like, I mean, you played in this league 17 years. How big is your best offensive lineman? Does it change the way you think, the way you audible, the way you call plays?
It definitely changes the way you think approaching a ball game, because I played with Mike Munchak, probably one of the best guards to ever play the game. I also played with Bruce Matthews, who played it's a center and guard. Those guys were unbelievable in the middle of our pocket, and they really made it easy for me to step up and throw the football. And that's something I think with Dak Prescott that you're worried about with that ankle injury. Is he going to be able to step up and be comfortable throwing the ball in the pocket? Because a lot of pressure comes up the middle a lot of times, and I'm sure because he hasn't really played any live football in 11 months, he's going to be a little bit cautious about people falling around his feet. So you want to make sure the middle of the pocket is solid. And Zach Martin is one of the reasons for that pocket to be solid. So him not being in there is going to be a big loss for him. Plus, he's the guy that Zeke, the running back, likes to cut back off of,
yep,
because he makes such good blocks that way in the middle of the pocket. So that's gonna affect their running game as well. And he's just a leader on that offensive line, a 4-time All-Pro guy, and the guys just look up to him. So not having him in the lineup against a team like Tampa is going to be tough.
I tend to be start Andy Dalton, start Cam Newton, start Jimmy Garoppolo. I am a believer, unless you have a Trevor Lawrence, it's a total rebuild. Start your young guy. I'd love to see. I thought Cam should start, Dalton should start, Garoppolo should start. And then Mac Jones, I just said it, shocked me. He only played one year at college, and he's starting. Are you surprised by it? Do you understand the thinking around it for New England?
I was not shocked by it, but I was a little surprised. But the way Mac has played in the preseason, I think, really impressed the coaches. I think he fits kind of more what they want their quarterback to be, a guy that gets the ball out of his hands quickly, a guy that is very, very accurate with the football and makes quick decisions. That's not Cam's strength as a passer. So I think the fact that Cam missed some time with COVID, I think that played a part in it. He missed time last year and it affected his play, and he's already missed time this year because of it. So I think that's something that the organization didn't want to tolerate either. So the combination of those reasons is because that's one of the reasons that Mac Jones is starting, because of those certain aspects of what's going on there right now.
You know, you played into your mid-40s, and Tom Brady here's, we know his age. Most quarterbacks say they lose their legs. They can still spin it 10 years after they quit. When you went into your last couple seasons, did you, your preparation, your practice, did you take Tuesdays or Wednesdays off? I mean, as great a shape as Tom is in, and we live in a new world now for nutrition and plyometrics and all that stuff, but as an older quarterback, did you think differently, train differently, prepare differently in your years?
No question. I trained differently, and I added things to my regimen. I had massage twice a week, went to chiropractor a couple of times a week, sometimes even acupuncture. I had a stretching program for my arm and my rotator cuff to make sure my arm stayed nice and fresh. So yeah, there was a lot of things I did. I changed some of my diet as well. And, Tom has done all those things. He's probably as great a off-season workout guy as there is as far as his training regimen. He works out with Tom House, his passing coach, and his arm is in probably better shape than it's ever been. He probably has more zip on his football now than he did 10 years ago. So he just takes tremendous care of himself. That's part of it. And then he's in an offense where he can get rid of the football really quickly, so he doesn't take a lot of punishment. So all those things really help you stay around a lot longer. But there's just certain guys, I think, Colin, in certain sports that play a lot longer than other guys. You look at Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, yeah, was playing at 42 years old with, yep, the Lakers and very effective. You look at George Foreman, he was boxing at 50 years old and, you know, boxing for a championship. So, and Nolan Ryan was throwing no hitters at 40 years old. So there's just certain guys that can play certain sports a little bit longer because of their makeup.
You know, it's interesting. I want to go to college football. I've said this before. You were the first quarterback that was like my first. You were the first quarterback star I saw in my life, because I grew up in Seattle and you'd come from Los Angeles. You go to the University of Washington and you were running around and making big throws. And it was like, it was the first time I'd seen a quarterback. I was like, oh, this is my quarterback on my team. And I think it was almost pre-Seattle Seahawks being, you know, noteworthy. And I watched Bryce Young for Alabama this weekend. And it's funny, not a big guy, but somehow he gets leverage. He's got a very strong arm. And I'm just watching him just step into Alabama, and it's just like it's like the high school tape I watched. I'm like, he's just so effective and so easy. And I was, you know, somebody once told me something years ago. It's hard to tell the difference between good and very good, or good and not very good, but great is easy to spot because all great athletes make it look easy. The game just comes easier. And I watched Bryce Young, and there's a lot of good young quarterbacks out there. I don't know if you saw him at all, but what do you make of how good 18 and 19-year-old quarterbacks are? How good were you at 18?
You know, these guys are so much more developed. As far as physically, I was as good as anybody physically, but these guys have been playing in these passing leagues since they were in junior high school, these 7-on-7 leagues. They have quarterback trainers since the time they're in high school or junior high school. So they just come much more prepared when they get to college and also to the NFL, because they're really well trained on the fundamentals. And they also have played a lot of football and seen a lot of different defenses, thrown a lot of snaps. So they're just much more prepared. And that's why you can see a kid like him come in here and have success so quickly, because he came to Alabama ready to play. It's just a matter of waiting his turn. He has great instincts in the pocket. That's, yes, what I loved about him, as far as feeling the pass rush, knowing when to step up, knowing when he'll step up, but he's stepping up to throw. And I love that about him, that he wasn't taking off and running every time. He took off up in the pocket, like right here, and just throwing the football, looking up the field, always trying to find somebody down the field. But he had great instincts of where the rush was coming from. So those things come from having a lot of reps when you're young all the way up through the system.
Yeah, he really does. It's just the game. He's so smooth and so confident. And you're like, he's 18 years old, 19-year-old kid stepping into these huge national TV spotlight games. Warren Moon, great seeing you. You got a plane to catch, I'm told. Get the luggage and go.
I got a plane to catch. Thanks a lot, Colin. Good to talk to you, man, as always.
You bet. Yeah. No, it's when you watch him, when you watch certain players, the game is easy. I can remember having this conversation watching Michael Jordan, and this is right in the middle of his greatness. And I'm thinking, well, he's 6'6". Well, there's a lot of 6'6 guys in the NBA. And, you know, he's not a great ball handler, but he handles the ball. And it was so easy. And there was a lot of guys that could jump. And I mean, Michael didn't look different than other players. You're just like, it's so easy for him. So effortless. Kobe had that. Kobe wasn't the strongest or didn't jump the highest. Just some people, like Bryce Young's just like, that's not the way it's supposed to look. As an 18-year-old, it's not supposed to look like that. Like, he felt pressure. He knew when to. I mean, literally just the whole game, he just so instinctive. So his feet are. And look at how he throws. He's not a big kid. He's not big. And he just. Look at how easy the ball comes out here. In your end zone, just step into it. That's a.
Yeah, it was personally painful to watch, but but it was very impressive.
God, he's really talented.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Sunday on Fox, the NFL is back with a huge doubleheader. First, Jalen Hurts leads the Eagles against the Falcons. Then, in America's Game of the Week, Aaron Rodgers leads the pack against Alvin Kamara and the Saints. It all kicks off at 1 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Check local listings for the game in your area.
It's interesting. A lot of noise around the Packers this year. A lot of noise.
They're still a really good team.
I have them winning their division. I'm just not going to give them 13 wins. Vegas, you know, Vegas usually, they're called future bets or over-under bets. Vegas is usually very accurate. Fans tend to think my team's going to win more games than, you know, like Fox Bet's going to predict. But the truth is the value is almost always betting fewer wins. And I do think this year will be a little different because of the 17th game added. Now, if you noticed what happened because of the 17th game added, what happened in the preseason? Almost nobody played starters. So these coaches are like, I'm not going to play. You're going to add a game in the other end. I'm not playing any of my starters. And I don't remember a preseason in my life where fewer players were hurt. Basically two running backs. Rams lost a running back, and it was like a non-contact like injury. And then the Ravens did during a game. So like one elite player got hurt in the preseason. That's fantastic, right? We don't want any of them. So I think what you're going to see is I do think the really good teams, Kansas City, Baltimore, Buffalo, Tampa, I wouldn't be surprised if they were a little more liberal in their game management and season management with veteran players. I can see teams giving this a veteran offensive lineman a week off after the bye, get back-to-back weeks. I just have a feeling, you know, you add games, there won't be quite as much coaching urgency in the middle, later parts of the season. So, I mean, you look at Kansas City and you're like, well, they should win every game. They have the best players. But I think if you can win 12, 13 games this year, and that's going to be huge. 12-5 is going to be a great record. I think the bottom of the NFL is very small. Houston, I don't like Philadelphia, Jets, Detroit. The bottom's very small. The top's twice the size, and the middle is huge. I honestly think the middle of the NFL, the bottom's about four teams. The top's about eight. And I think you have the middle's 20. Those teams are coin flips. Minnesota plays Atlanta. Where's the game at? What's the health list? I think the league is overwhelmingly in the middle, just like a country's economy. When the majority of it's right in the middle, maybe slightly above middle class, slightly below, that's when your economy is healthy. Not too much money at the top, not too much poor at the bottom. You want most people living the same kind of lives. The NFL right now, eight at the top, 3-4 at the bottom, rest of the league right in the middle. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see what the 17th game, what kind of effect that has on seasons moving forward. And you also have to consider COVID as well this year.
Also, I think practices are lighter. You just can't keep asking 36-year-old players. I mean,
I think practices are going to be a lot of walkthroughs. Like whatever amount of padded is going to go down even more, especially for older players. And I do think if there's any sort of blowouts, which you generally don't see, but they're going to pull starters much sooner as soon as this game starts to peel away, to save guys, especially later in the season. So getting back to this amazing college football weekend, Spencer Rattler's Heisman campaign got off to a little bit of a shaky start.
Yeah.
Second-ranked Oklahoma barely held on to beat unranked Tulane. Rattler threw for 304 yards, a touchdown, and two interceptions in the win. He also ran in for another score. So they were able to get the 40-35 win despite Tulane's two late touchdowns in the fourth.
Yeah.
And after the game, Rattler spoke about how tough the matchup was.
It was one of the hardest hitting teams, one of the most physical teams I've ever played. And, they came out there and played great. They played better than us for sure. They wanted to win more than us. You could just tell it. But we just got to be cleaner, got to be sharper. I got to be better.
This game, not as much as the Notre Dame game, because obviously Tulane is not considered as good as FSU, but this was probably a little bit of a wake-up game for Oklahoma.
You know, for those Tulsa players, they probably grew up dreaming they wanted to play for Oklahoma, and Oklahoma didn't offer them a scholarship. So these are always the dangerous games.
Tulane.
It was Tulane. It wasn't Tulsa. Oh, my bad. Forget it then.
Yeah, it was Tulane. But, Tulane was in a very difficult situation because the game was moved there. So they tried to do a good job of, making them feel welcome. The fans were cheering for them when they came out because it was, obviously not supposed to be there. But, I think it's might be a little bit of an overreaction. Like, you have these games sometimes where a lesser opponent's going to get up for a big game and give a good performance. And they are a tough team.
And by the way, there's no preseason for these college kids, and they have limitations on how many hours they can practice. So don't be shocked if good teams
struggle a little bit early.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Alabama and UCLA, I was kind of blown away by how clean the game was. Like I'm watching UCLA and Alabama. I was like, Wow. This is a, I mean, it's amazing how clean the games were.
UCLA was probably more surprising to people. I think we probably got a little ahead of ourselves with Alabama. Like, they still are Alabama. Bryce Young is the favorite to win the Heisman, according to Fox Bet, but Spencer Rattler has the second best odds to win.
Well, Sam, how the quarterback at North Carolina struggled. Now, he lost a lot of receiver. He lost a great receiver, a great running back, but both the top two quarterbacks, supposedly, according to the NFL guys, both had bumpy weekends.
So Andy Dalton is the Bears starter right now, as we know, QB1. But Justin Fields is working to take his spot. And even though there's a competition going on and a little bit of hostility in the city about who should be starting, they've managed to build a nice relationship. Matt Nagy told Abra Breer, these guys have an unbelievable relationship. Andy's a huge supporter of Justin, and Justin's a huge supporter of Andy. And when you have that and worry about what you can do to make the rest, make us and you better, then we'll all be successful.
That's nice.
I think this is nice, but it's also pretty obvious. Like, Justin Fields was pretty vocal about how he felt about the fans, you know, reacting to Andy Dalton. And I think he has a lot of self-awareness for the situation. Does Justin Fields, and a young player in a very pressure-filled situation. Like, this is a little bit, it's just a little tense, it feels like, for me, because people are so split on who should be starting for the Bears and what the reason for Andy Dalton starting is. How long is this going to last? Is there any value to Justin Fields not starting?
Here's another thing. Is that game, I think it's the Sunday night game. So if Andy struggles, the whole world's going to see it. Like, that Sunday night standalone game and Monday night. So it is interesting here. If Andy Dalton, it's one thing if they lost on the 1 o'clock window, but if a night game, standalone game on Sunday night, and the Rams defense picks apart Andy Dalton, then Matt Nagy's going to take. That's when I think that's a tough opener. Great defense, new quarterback, backup young star breathing down quarterback's neck, and it's a national TV game. So not only will Chicago fans complain, but if Andy struggles, then the nation is going to be like, what are you doing with Justin Fields? So that's a tough opener for Chicago.
Well, it's also a little bit of what are you rooting for? You know, if you're a Bears fan, like, are you rooting for Andy Dalton to struggle? Because, you know, you want your team to win, obviously, but do you feel like you can win playoff games with Andy Dalton? So if I'm a Bears fan, I'm just conflicted as to what the plan is. Now, there's obviously the conversation of, what do you owe the rest of the guys in the locker room? Like, do you owe them wins, or do you owe them the development of Justin Fields? And that's, you know, that's a little bit of the struggle when you have a young quarterback like Justin Fields that you drafted as high as you did, but you have a veteran there in the house, like, which every team doesn't necessarily have. Like, Jacksonville, if you're on the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know what it is. Like, you're just Trevor Lawrence, young quarterback, this is what you're going with. Zach Wilson, he's the guy. Like, there's no conversation about, you know, should we be starting a veteran? But when you have them there, this becomes the dilemma. And Chicago hasn't had a quarterback in a long time.
Well,
so we know what the fans are sort of rooting for.
Yeah. One of the fun things about week one of college or week one of pro football is it's like overreaction Monday.
Yeah.
Like, I'm probably going crazy overreacting, but like you football gives you some answers pretty quickly. And so you'll know if Andy Dalton should have been named the starter, and you'll know by like, 9 PM Pacific on a Sunday night.
Yeah. Because most people don't expect them to win that game, but if he is competent and, you know, they're just not as good as the Rams, that's fine. But if he's legitimately struggling, then that will be immediately the conversation. There's going to be an overreaction too, because we've talked so much about it. So Josh Allen has proven he's a young quarterback to watch as he heads into his fourth season. And some NFL executives think that he could win MVP this year. There's reportedly some sneaky MVP buzz around Josh Allen. He finished second in MVP voting last year, and according to Fox Bet, he has the third best odds to win in 2021 at +1100. He's only behind Patrick Mahomes at +550 and Aaron Rodgers at +1000.
I would say this about Aaron. I have been a huge supporter of Green Bay offensive lines. They do it better than anybody. I don't think it's a very good offensive line for Aaron. So, and I think the Vikings and the Bears are pretty good defensive fronts. I think Aaron's going to have not an MVP season. And I think you'll see it very quickly They lost a Pro Bowl center, and they don't have David Bakhtiari, the left tackle. Don't be surprised if Aaron faces much more pressure early in the season, even against the Saints, who aren't as good as Green Bay.
They still have a good defense.
Yeah, though. Saints defensive front.
The only thing about the Saints is they've had a rough couple of weeks with the hurricane and, right, you know, misplacement.
And that game's in with all Jacksonville.
The city. Yeah, it's not there, but I'm saying like that's something to consider with the Saints early in the season. The last five MVPs were Matt Ryan in 2016, then Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, and Aaron Rodgers. The NFL MVP isn't as it's not as narrative driven as the NBA MVP.
Right.
We kind of decide who we're rooting for at the beginning of the season in the NBA. But I don't know. Josh Allen at 3 is really juicy.
He is. In fact, I even saw Carson Wentz was like 22-1 from a betting standpoint. I was like, oh, I put a hundy on Carson Wentz. Philip Rivers last year was shockingly good.
Yeah, but for MVP?
I know.
So Tom Brady's at plus 1,400.
But Carson Wentz,
and Dak Prescott is at plus 1,500.
But Carson Wentz is a good story. I mean, he gets reunited.
A good story.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. The COVID thing, too, with him.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I don't know. Josh Allen's interesting.
Good stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Why can't we admit this coach is really good? In fact, he's great, and we can't. We'll talk about that coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week, explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Brian Kelly yells at players and occasionally has a really bad joke that doesn't land. But I will say this, he's had 4 head coaching jobs. He was good in one, and he's been great in all 3. People don't understand how hard it is to win at Notre Dame. When Lou Holtz left, yeah, they had 4 coaches that whiffed. And then Brian Kelly has now won 10-plus games in the last 4 years. Whether you like him or not, yells at players, tells bad jokes, whatever, dude can coach. He took a Wisconsin transfer quarterback, Jack Cohen, who was just average, and last night unleashed him, and the kid threw for the most completions, the most yards, the most touchdown passes in his career. And Wisconsin's got a good staff. But Notre Dame's hard. They ask a lot of their student athletes. How many times have I talked to a Notre Dame player in my 20 years doing this about the academic load they ask of their players? It's really hard. It's cold weather. Many of the cold weather titans of years gone by are now dead as programs, like Nebraska. By the way, look at the 3 rivals of Notre Dame. USC, Michigan, and Stanford are not in the same class as Notre Dame. This sport has changed. The SEC now dominates it. There are very few cold weather programs. Why? Because kids have options now. The warm weather kids can stay closer to home. It used to be you had to go to a Washington, Nebraska, Notre Dame, Penn State, Michigan. Now you just go to Florida or Florida State or Miami or LSU or Georgia or Auburn. Or kids stay closer to home, and there's more great talent south than there is north. But Notre Dame and Brian Kelly have prevailed. They are a great program, held on last night. Here's the kick that won it for them.
This would win it from 41 yards out. We await the snap. Hold is down. The kick is up. Ball game. Notre Dame wins. He nailed it.
And they run off into the locker room to celebrate the win, giving the tomahawk chop as they leave. What a moment for Jonathan Dorer.
By the way, college teams rarely beat other good college teams on the road. That's a big thing for Penn State over Wisconsin or Notre Dame over Florida State, and the Noles look like they're back. I asked Brock Huard, college football guy for Fox, former NFL too, about why Brian Kelly doesn't get the love of others.
Because they didn't have the national title that Jimbo or Dabo or Nick has or some of those. I think that's 1. 2, when he's been on that stage against Alabama, it's been men versus boys, unfortunately for him. And number 3, Colin, he's always been a college guy. I think what you see and what I see is a guy that hires a tremendous staff. And that is the NFL world. Brian Kelly has turned his staff over when it's been wrong. He's been willing to make that move quickly, which you have to. You have to fail fast. An old Amazon, theology is, let's go for it. But if it's wrong, we got to fail fast. And he knows how to hire a tremendous staff. That was on display last night.
Yeah, and Nick Saban and Brian Kelly have no problem admitting, I'm wrong, I'm pivoting, I'm moving off stuff, I'm elevating, I'm adapting. And that's why two older coaches and a lot fail and a lot don't age well, and both have. Notre Dame's like a top five or six program. And I remember saying years ago, they'll never get back. The sport has changed. Kids are staying closer to home. They don't want to go play 90 minutes from Chicago. They don't want to. A lot of the academic powers, Stanford has gone down. Their rivals, USC, Michigan, gone down. Notre Dame's a real team, real players. They can go toe-to-toe with anybody not named Alabama, maybe Clemson. But I think they can go toe-to-toe this year and play with Clemson. All right, so Joy's got a story. So it is interesting in our space. I can always tell when football season's close because my email and Twitter – people get nastier and meaner and angrier. Why? Because we love football more than other sports. So everybody gets crazy and unglued. So the quarterback in the league I've been very critical of is Tua of Miami. Oh, I can't believe it. Your own team tried to trade for Deshaun Watson. Your own team in Miami has questions about Tua. What are you talking about us for? The second one is the Raiders. And I've said this, I would never give John Gruden's personality a 10-year contract. There's a lot of businesses you can be out of for 10 years. The post office, work at a grocery store, not NFL coach or Silicon Valley. And I have felt from day one, I still don't know what the Raiders are. I don't know what they are. 3 years into this rebuild, what are they? They're not good defensively. They don't have a pass rush. They just lost three starters in the offensive line. What are they? Well, here's an example, because I've said, when you give somebody that's highly emotional, and that's Gruden, ultimate power, Jim Harbaugh's a little bit of this, is that if you surround them with too many yes men, they become their own worst enemies. Well, here's a story of the day. Joy Taylor has it on players they just cut.
So they just waived 2020 third-round pick Tanner Muse, who was a linebacker from Clemson.
Third round.
Never played a snap for the Raiders because he missed the entire last season with a toe injury. So this is the second of their third-round picks from 2020 that they have moved on from the Raiders before ever playing a regular season snap for the team. And to add insult to injury, today is Tanner Muse's birthday. So
now he'll probably get picked up by somebody. Third-round picks usually get... You wave them, they get picked up by somebody.
They had Muse and Lynn Bowden Jr., who was traded to the Dolphins prior to the 2020 season. So he's the other one that they've already moved on from. Brian Edwards was the other third round pick who's projected to start at wide receiver. But yeah, their
drafting has been a lot of misses.
Yes.
A lot. And the thing that always jumps out to me when I see a team get taken over, is there a plan? This has always been my thing. I never judge a coach on their first year, but I got to see a plan. And I knew when I didn't buy into the Raiders' plan, when they talked about we got to get high character guys in the draft. So they overdrafted players who were nice guys. And then they started signing like Antonio Brown and Richie Incognito, who can play. You wouldn't classify them as high character guys. I'm not saying they can't play. And there's a space for, both those guys in the NFL. I got no problem with Richie playing or Antonio playing. But you can't tell me your plan is high character. I think Vontaze Burfict got brought in, too. It's like, timeout. Those are three of the guys that you would not define as high character. So what's your plan? And what's happening with the Raiders? John is emotional. And emotional people wake up. Every day, you got a new plan. You got a new idea. You're hot and cold on personnel. I have never liked coaches having a big say in personnel. Coaches coach, GM's GM, owner's own, quarterback's quarterback. John now, I think, and Harbaugh had this at Michigan. You simply gave a highly emotional person way too much power, and they become their own worst enemy.
Well, he has power, he has say, but he also has a long runway. He has lots of time. All the time in the world, the most time ever, because he has that contract. So you can't move on from him. So if these draft picks don't perform, if they don't take a big step up, then it's going to be Mayock who's moved on from, not John Gruden.
So I have the Raiders. My fourth place teams are Jets. I feel strongly about Texans. Raiders, Bengals. I feel the bottom is very clear in the AFC. The NFC, it's Philadelphia, Arizona, Lions, and I'm not sure on the NFC South. I don't want to hear Carolina. I am not equipped to handle Sam Darnold in last place. I'm not equipped for that right now.